Well, there was an executive that was coming home from a long trip, and he was tired. Way too many trips, way too many plane flights, but he came to the airport, and as was his custom, he decided to go to Otis Spunkelmeyer. They make cookies, right? And he would buy a bag of cookies, and he would get on the airplane, and he would get the window seat, because he was always first on the airplane, and he would put the bag of cookies on the seat between him and the aisle seat, and he would pretend like he was sleeping. Now, if you've ever flown in Southwest Airlines, you know why you would do something like this. Because that means nobody's going to wake you up and take that middle seat. So you get a middle seat, right? So he goes and he gets in, he sits down, he puts his head back, and then all of a sudden, he falls sound asleep because he's so exhausted. The plane takes off, and they're flying back home, and he wakes up because in the aisle seat is this mother with a young child. And the young child is screaming. And he looks over at the young mother, kind of while he's still sleeping, and he says, I cannot believe this is happening to me. But then the most amazing thing was that the young mother reached into the middle seat, and there was a bag of Otis Spunkelmeyer cookies, and she grabbed one, and she gave it to her young child. And the child shut up. And the man's looking at that saying, I can't believe she did this. Well, so he pretends like he wakes up, and he's sitting there and as if nothing happened. And soon enough, the kid finishes the cookie and starts screaming that he wants another one. So the mother reaches over and grabs another cookie out of the bag and gives it to the young child. And the man looks at her and cannot believe what's going on. He simply cannot believe what's going on. So he reaches in the bag, and he grabs a cookie, and he starts eating it. And the mother smiles at him. Well, there's only one cookie left. And they're approaching to get done again. It was a short flight. And they were approaching landing, and the mother reaches in and pulls out the one last cookie. And she turns to him and shrugs her shoulder and breaks the cookie in half, gives him half. She takes half. They both eat the cookie. But by this, the man is absolutely furious that she has taken all his cookies. Although he was just going to leave them on the plane anyway. He was still obviously very furious. So she gets off first with the young child, and he kind of just pulls his luggage together, and he reaches under for his briefcase, and there underneath the seat was his bag of Otis Spunkelmeyer cookies. You can never judge all the time by what you see, can you? We always jump to conclusions, don't we? How many times have people jumped to conclusions about things that you've done? Or more importantly, how many times have you jumped to conclusions by how other people have reacted against you? Well, that's the story of today in Joshua. We are rapidly, rapidly coming to the conclusion of our sermon series on the book of Joshua. Last week was chapter 15. We're jumping all the way to chapter 22. And chapter 22 is a very, very interesting, fantastic story because it's about the people of Israel who jumped to conclusions. Now, you have to remember, when they came over across the Jordan, they apportioned all the land to all the different tribes. And 9.5 tribes were actually going to stay on that side of the Jordan River. But some of the promised land actually ended up being on the other side of the Jordan River. And 2.5 tribes were going to go back over the Jordan River, and that was their promised land. And so they started to head back. They crossed the Jordan River, and they set up an altar. Now, you have to remember that the people of Israel only have one altar. There was only one place to worship God. They ended up taking that altar and they put it in the temple in Jerusalem, but it was the place where they worshiped the one triune God. It was the triune God, but they didn't call him triune God. So they worshiped the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses in that altar in Jerusalem. It was the one altar, and then they heard word that the people who were the 2.5 tribes crossing over the Jordan River, they'd built another altar. And they were furious. We cannot believe that you built another altar. There's only one altar. There's only one God. Are you sacrificing to a different God? Because that's a no-no. We're going to come over and kill you if you're doing that. Or are you sacrificing to our God, but on a different altar? That is also a very bad thing, and we're going to come over and we're going to kill you. And they didn't know what to do. They were absolutely furious about this. So they sent a delegation to go and to talk to the 2.5 tribes. And they said, we understand that you've built an altar. We understand that you have an altar that you've built and you are either one, worshiping another god, and if so, I kill you. I just had to get that in there. Or If you're not worshiping another god, that means you're worshiping our God in a different altar. And if that's the case, I kill you. But it turns out that they had a very good explanation. And the explanation was this. They felt that by crossing over the Jordan River, they were going to be kind of disenfranchised from the tribes of Israel. They felt that by crossing the Jordan River, that they wouldn't feel like they were part of God's family. They felt that by crossing over the Jordan River, the children and the grandchildren, and at some point, they might say, you know, we're not part of them. They're not part of us. We're two totally separate people. And we don't want that to happen. And so when we crossed over the Jordan River, we built a replica of the altar. And we're not going to worship on it. We're not going to do anything. It's going to sit there as an altar, a replica altar, so that when we see that altar, our people will know that we are tied in to you, that we are all one family. We are one tribe. We are one family of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses worshiping the one true God. Now, folks, that was a reason that they had not considered. And when they heard this explanation, they said, oh my goodness, that's actually a pretty good thing to do. And so they didn't go to war. They didn't kill them. They let them go. But see, that is a very, very important thing, because how many times in our life do we jump to conclusions? How many times in your life have you jumped to conclusions about other people, about things that they've done, and you just see it and you jump? Now, last year, maybe it was about a year ago, there was a pastor's wife that came and spoke to our leadership group on a Sunday evening. And she brought with her this wonderful illustration. It was called the ladder of inference. And the ladder of inference is a psychological tool that helps you see what it is that you're doing when you make decisions. Because we see things and we start climbing the ladder of inference, and at the top of that ladder, we're making decisions, and it's all because of all the assumptions that go on. I know this is crazy. I just want to show it to you real quick, the ladder of inference, because it starts with, oh, okay, we won't start with that. I will explain it to you as best as I can. You see an observation. I see an observation. Now, you don't have any judgment at all in that observation. You just see it. But immediately, you see that observation, and you're immediately saying, aha. And you're making judgments about that observation. You're climbing the ladder of influence, because now you're adding your own thing into it. You climb the ladder of influence. And then you start looking at your own life and your own feelings and what you believe, and you start taking what you see and what you believe, and you pull them together, and you just start climbing that ladder of inference until finally you get to the very end where you make a decision based upon that ladder of inference. And folks, that decision that you're making based upon the ladder of influence is all stuff that comes to you based on one observation, but you add so much more into it based upon who you are and what you believe. And that's what happens. So many times we make decisions based upon what we see. We climb that ladder of inference based upon very faulty or judgments that we have seen that we don't fully understand. Like Mrs. Rhodes said about that hat. You look at that hat and you say, well, that's just the dumbest hat I've ever seen. But then as soon as you realize that that hat has a special value to her, it immediately changes your thinking. That's why Jesus says, if you've got a problem with somebody, in Matthew 18:15, Jesus says, you got a problem with somebody, don't start climbing the ladder of inference, go talk to him. If your brother sins against you, go and show his fault. Just between the two of you, if he listens to you, you've won your brother over. Jesus says, go and talk, clear up all the ambiguity. Say, this is what I observed, and I've started to climb the inference. This is kind of what I'm thinking based upon what I've observed. And that gives the person the opportunity to say, oh, no, you're reading that completely wrong. This is what you saw, but this was my action behind that. This is why I did what I did, and now all of a sudden there's communication. And now the things are going well. Now, folks, in congregations, we climb ladders of influences all the time. In the world around us, in politics, we really climb the ladder of influence all the time. And it can destroy. It can destroy relationships. It can destroy families. It can destroy congregations. It can destroy nations. All because we climb that ladder of influence and we make judgments and we jump to conclusions based upon what we see, but we don't have the actual facts. Jesus says, go to the person. Talk to them. Clear it up. Now, many of you know that I live in a house that belongs to a homeowners association. And the homeowners association, I really, when we looked at houses, I said, there's one criteria, and that is I don't want to be part of a homeowners association. And Jill Rain said, I hate to break it to you, but every house in Vail belongs to a homeowners association. I'm sorry. So we ended up being in a house with a homeowners association. Now, what is a homeowners association? Now, I hope none of you work for a homeowners association. I'm sorry about this. And you're okay, because that's all right. But the purpose of a homeowners association is basically so you don't have to go to your neighbor and say, you know, I really don't like your one weed sitting on the yard, and I wish you'd pull it, or let me pull it for you, and then it'll look nice again, right? We don't have that interaction with our neighbor. No, what do? We call up the homeowners association and say, my neighbor has a car with the wheels off sitting on the front lawn. I know that violates the homeowners association. I'm not going to go talk to him, but I want you to go talk to him. And so you get that letter from the homeowners association, right? I've got hundreds of them sitting in my mailbox. For everything. No, I'm serious. I think the homeowners association in my neighborhood is probably sitting out there camped in front of my, just waiting. Actually, I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you exactly what it is. I've got a lady that when we first moved in, we had an argument. She wanted me to do something because I was a civil engineer. I said no. And ever since that, she's kind of not giving me the time of day. And I think it's her. I think whenever I leave, she goes out in front of my house and just walks around looking to see what it is that she can point out, and then she writes a letter to the homeowners association, and then the homeowners association sends a letter to me, and then I'm up in arms because of this, and I know it's her. I know that she's doing that. I know that she's waiting for me to have one infraction of the law, and then she sits there, and she's got everything. She hasn't seen the chickens yet. I'm climbing the ladder of influence, aren't I? She may have nothing to do with the letters that I get. She may have everything to do with the letters I get. I don't know. But see how easy it is? See how easy it is. And as soon as it starts, you build this world around you about this is why life is happening to me the way it is, and it's all that person's fault. And you start building it and building it, and you climb that ladder and you climb that ladder until pretty soon you've built this whole story around you as to why that person is responsible for every wrong that's going on in your life. And it all started because of a little tiny judgment that you made about an action that they did or something that they said. Jesus Christ says, don't climb the ladder of influence. Don't judge people. If you've got a problem with them, go and talk to them. It is so hard, but it is so important because it can rip apart families, it can rip apart relationships, it can rip apart congregations, it can rip apart nations when we go up that ladder. You know, you don't like it when people come to you and make judgments about things that you've said or things that you've done when they have absolutely no idea why you did it or why you said it or why you did it. There's one who does. And that is God himself. See, he never climbs the ladder of influence because he knows everything about you. He knows exactly your motives, your judgments, what causes you to do the things that you do. And while everybody else in this world might judge you and say, oh, you did that because you're an evil person, God can see your heart and know why it is that you did the things that you did. But here's the other thing. Even when you are perfect on the outside and never do anything wrong, God still sees your heart. And when you are climbing the ladder of influence in your head, even though you do nothing about it, God sees that, see? God knows everything about you. And because of that, it separates us from God. But he sent his son Jesus into this world, who never climbed the ladder of influence, ever once. There was a story about him going with his disciples, and the disciples said, well, we see this man here, he's sick. Lord, who sinned? Was it his mom? Was it his father? You know, climbing that ladder of influence. And God says, it wasn't either one of them. Stop climbing that ladder. Jesus Christ never climbed the ladder of influence. And because he lived a perfect life, he washes over you and your sinful life when you're climbing that ladder all the time. And we do. And you know you do. So I'm not even going to go there. You do. We all do. But praise be to God that he sent Jesus into this world. Today we're honoring our confirmands. They're going to go to the confirmation service. That's something you need to think about in life. Don't climb the ladder of influence. It was a great lesson to Israel. They sent the delegation over. They found out the truth. They immediately came down the ladder. They said that was an honorable thing, and they went on. Think about what happened when they went back to the tribes. And they said, you know, we had the wrong spin on this altogether. Instead of being people who are against us, they are for us, and they are so for us, they built an altar to replicate ours. What a fantastic lesson to teach them early on as they began conquering and settling into the land, so that they would not automatically assume the best, but they would put the good spin on all their brothers and sisters in the foreign lands that were really their brothers and sisters. May God continue to do that for you. In Jesus' name, amen. My life before you.